My name's Greg and I'm an addict.
Hello, Greg.
And checking everyone here. I think there's been probably quite a lot of jokes and quips made about using a microphone, and you probably heard them all, but I don't like sitting in front of a microphone. I don't like the sound of my own voice, and I'm no stranger to public speaking. I've done shares and that before, but I always found it quite disconcerting hearing my own voice amplifies. It's nice to be here. Thank you, Dean, for asking me to come and share today. And it's an absolute privilege to come to such a well-respected meeting and such a big meeting to come and share. Of course, when Dean asked me, my voice straight out, he said, "What are you asking me for? I haven't got a message to carry, you know." But, you know, because of a loving power in my life and a good sponsor, you guys, and the 12 Steps in Narcotics Anonymous, I haven't had to use a drink or a drug today, you know, which I feel blessed and extremely grateful for, you know. And I haven't had to use a drink or drug since February the 20th. This year, so you know, I'm over 8 months clean, and you know, and it's completely different. It's amazing what can happen in a year, you know. I'm glad I made it tonight, because at 5 o'clock I was on the Grand Union Canal somewhere, I don't even know where, up in Buckinghamshire, on my girlfriend's barge. She lives on a 60-foot barge up there, and I've been helping her move it down to Aylesbury over the last week. I've been through about 15 locks today trying to find a mooring. Absolutely exhausting work, and it was a bit hit and miss whether I was going to be able to go and pick my car up, drive to Barnet, drop it off my brother's, get on the underground, get down here on a Friday evening. But I made it in plenty of time, so I'm really happy about that. And that's how I woke up this morning. You know, I wake up early every day, always have done, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock. She tends to stay in bed for a couple of hours after that, and I'll get a couple of hours on the canal in autumn, the sun coming up, the colours are absolutely incredible, the reds, oranges and yellows, the canal's like a sheet of glass. I can sit there and watch kingfishers and herons and do my readings, connect with the power in my life, and I just feel completely at ease. You know, that's not my lifestyle, that's her lifestyle, and I'm coming in and out of that. I live in Luton. Somehow I've ended up in Luton, but I come in and out of London to work and that. You know, but I absolutely love that. It's so important to me. And that, over the course of a year, my life has completely changed. You know, what I just described there is really how all my lives have been today, you know. And this time last year, I was in a job which I loved, but I found increasingly stressful. I worked in the criminal justice system. I worked for a substance misuse team in a prison with a lot of need, a lot of problems. I was the only worker there for the guys who had drug problems. There was an alcohol worker as well. And I kind of really got overwhelmed with it last year. I found myself making some choices and decisions in my life. I moved in with my long-time partner. We've since split up. Which I thought was a mistake. You know, everything was great for about 5 years when we lived in our own separate flats, and as soon as I moved in with her, you know, I really struggled with that, and I really found it difficult, and all of a sudden I had parental responsibilities over her daughter as well, who I love unconditionally, and she loves me, but I felt very ill-equipped to deal with all that stuff, you know. So I found myself really unhappy in my life. I found myself sitting on the M3, you know, a 45-mile journey up and down the M3, a 90-mile round journey up and down the M3 every day, ringing my sponsor, who's in the room tonight. I love him dearly. Complaining about the traffic and the weather in midwinter, you know, and it helped me kind of right-size things, you know, by telling me, like, you know, hold on a minute, you're sitting in your Audi on the M3 going to work, you know what I mean, which, you know, 8 or 9 years before that, you know, I turned up at a treatment centre in Bournemouth with a plastic bag off the back of a 5-year prison sentence, and that had been my experience for 20, 30 years. You know, I couldn't stay out of prison, You know, the irony is, you know, after about 3 or 4 years coming off that last prison sentence, because of engaging in the recovery process, coming to NA, getting a sponsor, going through the steps, sponsoring people, doing service, connecting with my higher power, getting involved in between the meetings, what was going on in NA, I became a really active member of Narcotics Anonymous. And because of all that, you know, I gained a life worth living. You know, I think that the general thing of what I'm sharing about tonight is, you know, quite often you have to be careful what you wish for, you know, because I've got all that stuff, you know, and I had money in the bank and the car and the holidays, the nice girlfriend, lovely place to live, I had a career. You know, I came into recovery when I was 38. I did about a year and a half in prison, then came out of prison. And so, you know, life really did take off for me and begin for me when I was 40 years old. You know, I'm 48 now. And I enjoyed many years in recovery, in Narcotics Anonymous. And then just a lot of changes happened, a lot of change with work, a lot of change in my relationship. I moved in with my missus. I found myself in a part of the country where there was no NA, and I had to travel like 40 miles after a heavy day working in a prison to get to a meeting. And I started to really struggle with that stuff, you know. I started to struggle with sponsees bringing me up all the time. I started, you know, sitting doing maths homework with my stepdaughter, and I'd get a sponsee on the phone wanting to tell me about his sexual inventory from the night before. And, you know, I kind of started to pull away from the fellowship. I was getting a bit fed up with it all, you know, knowing full well, you know, potentially what could happen if I did, you know. But I tried to keep my foot in. I still went to a meeting down in Salisbury, but it wasn't enough, you know. And I guess what I'm trying to get at was what I experienced last year. So after nearly 9 years clean, was the progression of my disease, even in abstinence, and I didn't even really see it coming at all, you know. And everyone around me did. I had friends, a sponsor. My sponsor would listen to me regularly moaning about my life, you know what I mean, but not really having the courage to make the changes I needed to, you know. And I've identified things throughout that process, you know, how I respond to things like that. And it was very much a case of when my back was against the wall, what I did was nothing. I just let it all happen, you know. I didn't really make the changes I needed to. As a result, the voice started telling me, you know, if you're not careful, you're going to use on this, you know, you're going to use. And I started to obsess about that again. You know, you've heard that, obsessing about using and obsessing about not using. That hadn't happened to me for many, many years. You know, I kind of, I lost the obsession to use drugs when I first came in 2005. And, you know, and what I found was that what was remaining was an obsession with me, you know, that was quite painful unless I did something about it, you know. And so I did, you know, I did. I did all the suggested stuff, and I was able to live my life quite happily, you know, and one day at a time, you know. And it was incredible. I had an absolutely incredible life. Yeah, so that voice that said to me, if you're not careful, you're going to use, turned into you're going to use, you know. And shortly before I picked up, you know, the intonation in that voice changed to a little, being a bit more excited about it. You're going to use, you know, and it became attractive, you know, using, just to change the way. I really got sick and tired of the way I felt, you know. Thank you, Dan. And I did, and it went from just, you know, over-the-counter painkillers, codeine. What the justification and the excuse I used was, I used to open a lot of heavy gates in the prison that I worked in. You know, I was a key holder, and I had to get around the prison. And I pulled, I stretched something in my thumb, a tendon or something in my thumb, and it was very painful, but not painful enough to go and buy over-the-counter codeine. But I did, you know. And it was just when I was really unhappy after a bit of a row with the missus, I was doing the shop in Tesco's, I walked past the pharmacy in Tesco's, something someone had told me about 3 years before about a particular brand of codeine stuck in my head, because it had dihydrocodeine in it and not codeine phosphate, and that stuck in my head. And I saw that straight away, and I just had no defence against it. I walked straight up and I bought a packet. As soon as I bought a packet, I had a drink. And then going to, like, you know, the source of the problem to look for a solution. I thought I'd go and get some Subutex to come off this codeine after I developed a habit, and no one knew. You know, the only person that knew was me. So I carried on working and carried on doing the stuff I'd always done. You know, and that turned into running out of my little supply and going to a friend of mine with a back problem to graft him for some of his morphine sulfate tablets, and I ended up with a massive habit. I ended up going to the street to score my drug of choice, which was heroin, you know, and something I swore I'd never do, you know, 9 years clear, I swore I'd never do that again. And I didn't, it was fairly easy, you know, I'd been out of that game for quite a long time. And I just went down to the high street in the town I was living. I saw a guy with his mouth organ sitting down in the doorway asking passers-by for a bit of change. And I said to him, well, you know, I'll give you a £20 note if you can go and get me a bit of gear. 15 minutes later, I had 4 bags of heroin in my hands, you know. And that progression of the disease just really took off from there. I was sitting in a guy's house. My ex was a probation officer, and I was sitting in this guy's house who I was getting to score for me, and it was one of her clients, you know, and he kept offering me crack. By then, you know, painkillers, Subutex, morphine sulfate, I'd gone to the doctors, I was buying illicit diazepam, I was drinking a lot, I'm taking heroin, and he keeps offering, you know, do you want a bit of white with that? You know, and I was saying, like, anywhere near that, I'm banging trouble, you know. You know, not really seeing. And then the voice said, oh, go on, just the one, you know what I mean? So, you know, I hadn't been at work by that time for a long time, and I ended up, and Mrs. kicked me out, and I ended up living in my car. And the grace of God and people in this fellowship, people picked me up and carried me into treatment again. And after working in treatment for many years, it was a hugely humbling experience. I went up to Luton to do some treatment, and straight away I had to let go of the ego and stop trying to do all the counsellors thinking for them, and sit there and accept that bit of treatment. And it's what I needed at the time to get me grounded and get me back into the rooms and do another 90 and 90. And then I did another 90 and 90. I re-engaged with my sponsor and I started going through the work again, you know. You know, it's a cautionary tale. You know, I read chapter 7 over and over again, you know, about a recovery and relapse. And after all that I'd been through, I remember my sponsor saying to me, I want you to read that every day for a month. I went, what, it's about 9 pages long, you know what I mean? But I did, you know, I read it every day, and I've been getting on with working my programme. You know, so my life's changed beyond recognition. You know, I wouldn't have believed it, you know. And I'm very happy to donate. I'm a very grateful member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm very grateful to be allowed to come here and speak today and share that with you. And I hope someone got something out of it. If you're new, you know, keep coming back to NA because this stuff really works. If you've been around a long time, keep on doing what you're doing. And if you need to make changes, have the courage to make those changes. You know, I didn't, and I kind of really fell hard. And I'm lucky to be alive. The way I used, I ended up in my car, completely powerless, crying, looking for a vein again. It was just an absolute nightmare. So, you know, I'm alive, I'm clean, I'm amongst you guys, and I feel very blessed today, so thank you very much.